going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices and give you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Hey, it's me, Paige DeSorbo, and I'm so excited to share my new shoe collection at DSW, filled with my favorite styles and trends for spring. Because if you know me, you know I'm kind of obsessed with shoes. And by kind of obsessed, I mean head over heels. You're going to love these shoes. So snag super cute styles like cute flats, fun heels, and cool sneakers from the Paige DeSorbo collection right now at your DSW store or DSW.com.
What's up? What's happening? Welcome in. It's the Hoffman Show on a Friday here on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app and streaming live, of course, on YouTube too at the Team 980, a show that will ask you, what do you think of the Commanders taking Josh Connerly? And then take your calls on it at 301-230-0980 very shortly. However, I will at first tell you what I think of the Commanders drafting Josh Connerly, the offensive tackle out of Oregon, who is a mammoth human being, 6'5", 315. He's got great length, 34 and a quarter inch arms. 34 is kind of the standard for tackles. Like, hey, if you got 34 plus inch arms, we're all good here. Will Campbell, by the way, 33. That is why there was so much consternation. Incredible feet. Guy played running back in high school as a freshman. Caught a touchdown pass as a tackle eligible play in his first year on campus at Oregon. So this is a special, special athlete the Commanders took last night. That's not to say he's perfect. There's a reason he went 29 and not 9 where Kelvin Banks Jr. did to the New Orleans Saints. But this is a guy that plenty of people whose opinions are more than respectable on the offensive line had as their top lineman in this class. Mike Tice of the former Minnesota Vikings head coaching fame, who was a long, long time offensive line coach in the league before that, he had Connerly as his top lineman in this draft. And so I think we can talk about the selection, the decision, compared to what else was on the board. But when you talk about the player, I totally get why they took him. That's who he is, a guy that adds to what is a supremely athletic offensive line. Tunsil is very, very special, obviously, at left tackle. Brandon Coleman would be my guess, playing left guard after all the tackle talk. That didn't even get to the offseason program. He'll probably kick inside and wind up playing guard, although he and Connerly will probably both get their shot at right tackle with the other one playing guard. So two pretty special athletes there. Two guys with basketball backgrounds who move really well, very fluid. And then we know what Sam Cosmi is, assuming that he comes back from that ACL clean and is the athlete that he has always been. And Tyler Biadasz at center is very solid as well. And I'm just again impressed at the conviction that Adam Peters has, and I'm impressed by some of the things they think about, some of the things they look at that seems so obvious in hindsight. It's like, of course, that's the thing that you would want to know. Of course, that's the thing that you would want to study. And that includes how he plays against top competition, or a prospect plays against top competition. And I found this bite from Adam Peters particularly intriguing last night. This is from the post-draft press conference. Adam Peters talking about some very specific tape that they watched and then had their R&D, research and development team, pull statistically in terms of the evaluation they do on everyone in an area where Connerly shined.
Yeah, that's a great question. That was something I was actually I failed to mention when I started the presser. But I think, you know, one, the way he competed against Abdul Carter, he went toe-to-toe with Abdul Carter, who's the best pass rusher in the draft. He did really well. And he did really well against a lot of really good players. He, you know, played Ohio State twice, and they were getting the break speed off in the second game, and he was still competing to the very last second, and that showed a lot. And just so those types of things you see in him. When we have metrics where our R&D department does a great job of giving us metrics, how do they perform against high draftable players? And so he performed really high against high draftable players, and that lined up with what our eyes saw. And so those things make you really not just his skill, but the fact that he will go toe-to-toe with those guys. He's not going to freak out. He's not going to panic. He's not going to do things that he doesn't normally do when he's, you know, face-to-face with a really great player.
And that's what you want. You want a guy that's going to play under control. You want a guy that, in this division especially, is up for those challenges. I mean, not only did he go toe-to-toe with Abdul Carter from a protection standpoint, they were helmet-to-helmet, nose-to-nose at one point after a couple of reps where they're getting after it pretty good. And so he's soft-spoken. He's you know, kind. He's all these things. Gregarious young man, but he's also a dude that he's an offensive lineman. And I mean, that is a ultimate compliment when you turn on the tape and you look at kind of the way he competes, the finish he has. I mean, he'll drive you through the ground. He'll pancake you. So there's just a lot to like there. And in terms of being able to stay within himself against top competition, one, he's going to see Carter twice a year. And if he's not, he's going to be matched up against Brian Burns, likely, and Kayvon Thibodeau in New York. The New York Giants just picked up Thibodeau's fifth-year option yesterday. Micah's in Dallas, obviously. And then you've got the slew of dudes in Philly, which also now includes Jahad Campbell, who somehow fell to them at the bottom of the first round. And I think this is why, ultimately, like, we can talk about, and I'm sure we will, some of you guys are going to call in and have gripes and gripe away at 301-230-0980. But I'm perfectly fine with them passing up some of the guys they did to say, what happens to our offense that was top five in the league last year by the end of the year when we don't have to game plan around the offensive line talent that we have? Because last year, the talent wasn't horrible like a lot of people thought it was going to be in the beginning of the year, but it was very average. Now you've upgraded significantly a left tackle. You're hoping you're upgrading, and you're certainly upgrading. Well, I'll say certainly athletically. Andrew Wiley's actually a pretty good athlete. But you're upgrading if Connerly's your right tackle. You still are upgrading athletically. That's how good of an athlete Connerly is. Like, Wiley's good. Connerly's special. Wiley has the veteran know-how, but hopefully Connerly, you know, by middle of the year would be the better player with some of the development that he can do. And by the way, Wiley is probably going to compete with Allegretti for the right guard spot until Sam Cosmi's back, because he's played guard and played guard at a decent level before. So you're upgrading your guard spots. Your center is going to be the one thing that's the same. And putting that in front of Jaden Daniels, also putting that in front of your run game to supplement what Jaden Daniels can do, adding Deebo Samuel, like, you've made a strength stronger. And that's going to help your defense, because you can stay on the field and sustain drives in a way that was very similar to when you found success last year. It's easier to do when you've got the O-line to do it. And now, instead of having to game plan and scheme the offensive line to work, you just throw those guys out there and be like, hey, bros, block. And, by the way, that also frees up some of your eligibles. If you can get some of these chips and all that kind of stuff you had to do, just get those guys out in routes. Now what happens to your offense? So it's an exciting pick. It's grown on me a lot since last night. I think I was surprised at first, and that probably influenced how I initially reacted to it. I just thought tackle wouldn't be on the board for them. I believed them too much when they said Brandon Coleman right tackle. But Josh Connerly going to probably be the guy who gets the best shot there. Coleman will fit in where he gets in. And the other thing about those two guys to wrap up here before we get to your calls and more from Adam Peters is the way both of those dudes are built, the character on both of them, whatever, however it shakes out, they're just like, I'm here for the team. Those two, I wouldn't surprise me if Coleman and Connerly become really good friends. They share similar backgrounds in terms of the you know, played other sports, played a bunch of basketball, like really good athletes. I'm very excited to see that room coalesce, and those two dudes should be in front of Jaden Daniels for a long, long time. When we get back, we'll take your calls. What do you make of the Josh Connerly pick? 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980, plus more from Adam Peters next on the Hoffman Show. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app, streaming live on YouTube too at the Team 980. You can call us at 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980. What you think of the Commanders taking Josh Connerly, the offensive tackle, out of Oregon with their first pick at 29 overall? Apparently had a couple of offers to trade down. They didn't like any of them more than they liked Connerly. Adam Peters told the Command Center show last night before he stepped into the press conference room that he thought the Bears might take Connerly at 10. He was sweating as soon as Kelvin Banks Jr. went off the board at 9 to the Saints. Ultimately, their guy still there at 29. Let's go to Jack and Frederick to get us started on the phone. Jack, thanks for calling. You are on the Hoffman Show.
Hi, Craig. How you doing?
I'm good, man.
Hey, so I've done a few mock drafts over the past couple weeks, and my last one, the night before the draft, I had traded down to 40 and got Josh Connerly as my first pick. And it looks like that wasn't going to be the case if we had traded down last night, that somebody else would have taken him. So I'm thrilled with the pick. I think it does solidify the offensive line even more. And we have a lot of options now for strength all across the line. And when I watched his film, it looks like he does some of the things that we like to do on offense really well, like getting out on screen passes and some of the guard tackle pull runs. And I know we're aiming for a running back later in the draft, but I think having another offensive lineman, it's just going to make it that much easier for whoever we have at running back to get more wide open holes to run through. So I'm excited for both the passing game and the running game.
Yeah, Jack, and you know, I think you're 100% right that if you could have done what you did in your mock draft and traded down to 40, they would have loved to do it. But I think there was not a great chance that Josh Connerly was going to be available. Thanks for the call, dude. And I think Jack's also 100% right in terms of what the options are for this offense and what they like to do. If you want a guy who can get out in the screen game in front of, I don't know, Deebo Samuel, Josh Connerly is a really good choice. He runs so well. Now, he does occasionally have some trouble hitting little guys in space, but that's because that's really hard. And so that's a skill that I'm sure Bobby Johnson and some of the veteran teammates that he has can help him with. A guy like Laremy Tunsil can be like, hey, this is how I target. Let's work on this so they can get better at that skill. But you can't teach the guy to be fast and explosive in the first place. And I think that to me is the biggest thing is the stuff that I would mark down, or that, you know, you read about, that you see on tape, that's his weakness, is stuff I feel like you can work on, especially when you're him. He is a third year true junior. Okay. This is not a kid with a COVID year. There's not whatever. Like, there's some of these guys. Who were we looking at? We were looking at David Walker this morning. And by the way, at 5 o'clock, you'll hear, Logan and I talk about some of the guys that we think are going to be in the mix for day two. So you'll hear that coming up as today's edition of Not My Beat. If you want Logan's full breakdown of Connerly and how he fits in and all that kind of stuff, check out Take Command, at some point this weekend. But, we were talking about like David Walker from Central Arkansas, edge rusher. He's like 25 years old and he was playing at Central Arkansas. I'd hope if you're remotely close to an NFL prospect, you're crushing people at 25 in the FCS. But for a guy like Connerly, he's out there in one of the best two conferences in college football as a young player, and he's more than holding his own. He's really, really good. And because he's a leaner body type at 6'5", 315, compared to these dudes that are 330, 340, he carries it so well, he can actually get stronger, I think. And I think a couple of years, I think what he walks into in camp this year, and to spring camp specifically, is going to look different than what he looks like when he walks into training camp, and is going to look different than what it looks like when he walks into the spring next year. This dude's body is going to transform as he finishes growing as a 21-year-old going on 22 in November, and he gets with a professional strength program, and his job is now to work out and eat in the ways that he is told to, as opposed to balancing that with whatever class load a Division I athlete takes at this point in the NIL era. Not that class was ever the most important thing for some student athletes. Although Josh Connerly does feel like a guy that went to class. It's whatever that's worth. Probably nothing. Let's go to Aveen. Aveen's in D.C. Thanks, Aveen, for calling. You're on the Hoffman Show. What do you think of the Commanders taking Josh Connerly?
Hey, Craig. I think it's an exciting pick. Connerly got on my radar a couple days ago with McShay's final mock draft. And I think he generally has good intel. And he was saying that from what he had heard, Washington was in on four people, four names in play for 29. And he said Connerly, Eman Wari, and then two running backs, Henderson and Hampton. So I just became way more cognizant of Connerly as a possibility. And I think it's really interesting because we were a top five-ish type of offense last season. And how many offenses, the following off season make two changes or two significant investments at tackle, like two changes to the tackle position. That's like something you don't really see. So I'm wondering what that means. How much improved is our running game going to be? How much improved can our screen game be? How much more creative can Cliff be? And if Jaden's going to be able to drop back more. So I think it's exciting. And I think we're building something that maybe just rivals Detroit in the NFC in terms of offense. Maybe Tampa too is up there. But what I'm interested in hearing from you is about the idea of, of need versus best player available. Because once we got to pick 29 last night, I had a bunch of people texting, oh, we have all these like big names available that are falling. And I was thinking to myself, just knowing from last year's draft and Adam Peters, I was like, I bet it's like a name we're not even thinking of. And it's like a position we haven't really thought of that much either. So I'm just thinking about that because a lot of people are saying, edge rusher and corner. And I think I genuinely believe when they say they're, satisfied or, happy with the roster they have right now and they think they could play tomorrow. Although corner does scare me a little bit because Lattimore has injury history.
I mean, I'm going to have to cut you off because we're up against the clock, but it's a great call, and I'm going to answer your question. But I appreciate it, buddy, and thanks for the call. So to get straight to the question at the end there, and I think he brought up a bunch of really great points along the way, I think that they go best player available, especially early on, without fail. With the exception of if there's a quarterback, and that's going to be in a different bucket. They see the draft the way the draft should be. This is a long-term building block. Think of how many one-year deals. And Peter's talked about this pre-draft, right? There's plenty of guys that they've signed over the last couple of years that they would have liked to sign to multi-year deals, but the guys don't necessarily want to because they know if they ball out, then they can go get paid at a higher rate from the Commanders or somewhere else. Like, I bet you they wanted to sign last year Jeremy Chinn to a multi-year deal. And Chinn was like, I'm good. And he played really well, and then he went and got paid somewhere else. And the Commanders just kind of had to be like, all right, well, you're worth more to them than you are to us. That be the market. It is what it is. But the draft is where you get multi-year cost-controlled assets. And Laremy Tunsil is, 30-something years old. Do I think he can play 3 to 4 more years at a high level? Yeah, probably. Tackles play a long time in the league. But what happens if Laremy Tunsil in 2 years is starting to decline? you can move on from him and you could kick Josh Connerly back over to left tackle and be like, all right, here we go. Josh Connerly is now the guy protecting Jaden Daniels' blind side. On the offensive line, like Wiley, Allegretti, those contracts are expiring, and I think you're looking for upgrades. At every other position, the same thing is true, right? Like, you've got guys that if you start tomorrow, you're not dead in the water, but there's no need to take an inferior player at any position because the whole point is to get the best football players possible over the long run. And the draft is where you do that compared to free agency where you're plugging holes and you know, just kind of getting by for the year. And so I think where people are going to lie to themselves is they're going to be like, well, this wasn't the best player available or this guy's not. I'm telling you right now, listen to them talk about him and listen to what Peter said when he said to Command Center, I was sweating starting at 10. They had a top 15 grade on this dude. They had a bona fide, genuine first-round grade. Like, Dane Brugler had a first-second on him. He's 23rd player on Dane's top 100. I think that they were significantly higher on him. And clearly, guys like Mike Green, Will Johnson, were not on their boards. Will Johnson does not get to the second round if that foot injury and the other injury concerns, the medicals, aren't bad, like real bad. Mike Green, I heard he didn't interview well around the multiple accusations, that he got real defensive with teams did not feel comfortable with it, and you're not gonna invite that into your building if, one, you don't feel like you can trust the guy, and two, you think it's a risk. Like, you don't like the way he talks about this stuff, and you think that it could happen again. You don't want your logo flashed up on the screen with our player, our team, accused of sexual violence. And like, Mike Green's been accused twice in two different places. And so I know some people be like, oh, Donovan Ezeraku. Like, they didn't have as high of a grade on Donovan Ezeraku. And a lot of other teams were the same. A lot of teams had Ezeraku as an early second type of guy. They had Josh Connerly, top half of the first round. I bet a week's, I'd probably be willing to bet a year salary on it. That's probably not a very smart thing to do. But I would bet you that at least a week's salary that they had a top 15 grade on Josh Connerly. And Adam Peters was terrified that someone else did too. And luckily for them, enough other good players were available in this draft and enough other teams didn't need tackles. And teams that did, like Houston, traded out because Atlanta pulled in Atlanta again. And that allowed them to do what they did. 301-230-0980 is the phone number, and we will take more of your calls on The Hoffman Show next.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Hey everyone, quick shout out to Whole Foods Market. You know I'm all about eating fresh and finding quality ingredients, and that's exactly what Whole Foods delivers. Whether you're grabbing organic produce, high quality meats, or just a quick healthy snack, they've got you covered. Plus, they're all about sustainability and supporting local farmers, which I love. Next time you're grocery shopping, check them out. You'll taste the difference. Spring is the perfect time to refresh your table, and Whole Foods Market has everything you need. Hosting brunch? Picture this. Flaky, buttery quiche, crispy bacon, fresh berries, and of course, cold-pressed orange juice to brighten up your morning. And if you're in the mood for something fizzy, check out their seasonal Italian sodas. Berry Blend and Orange Hibiscus are total must-tries. So whether you're planning a casual get-together or a full-on feast, Whole Foods Market has you covered. Make Whole Foods Market your destination for all spring gatherings.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. That's why Dollar Shave Club makes the razors, but you make the rules. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Dollar Shave Club products are now available everywhere. Or visit their site right now for 20% off $20 or more. And get your products delivered right to your door. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/shaveup and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more. And remember, whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
Today's podcast is sponsored by Midi Health. At any given time, 61% of adult women say they want to lose weight. But for many, that's easier said than done. If you've had trouble losing weight, don't lose hope. Midi Health uses a deep understanding of women's hormones and a combination of weight loss medications to create a customized plan for each user. Midi Health can help you achieve more effective and sustainable weight loss by addressing hormone imbalances. Midi can also prescribe proven weight loss medications that help you experience reduced appetite and increased feelings of fullness. When paired with hormone optimization, you're not just managing your weight, you're also supporting your body's natural processes, which means you can overcome those weight loss plateaus that in the past have been so difficult to move beyond. So if you're ready to combine the power of hormones with the power of weight loss medications, visit joinmidi.com today. Discover how this innovative approach can lead you to lasting success. That's joinmidi.com.
Commanders take Josh Connerly, 29th overall in the 2025 NFL Draft. What did you hear from Adam Peters more throughout the show? Who could they take at 61? And how could a trade look and all that kind of stuff? Who's kind of in the range, in the bucket? We'll get to all of that with Logan Paulson at the top of the hour. Plus, some of the other big stories from around the NFL and around the draft last night. Before the end of the show today at 6 o'clock, which, by the way, programming note, we're done at 6:15 today because we have Nationals baseball here on the Team 980. So Charlie and Dave get you going with Nats on Deck at 6:15. But Logan and I will let you hear who we think is kind of in the mix coming up at 5 o'clock, and then Clint Yates going to join at 5:30 for his Friday visit to talk about Shedeur Sanders' fall out of the first round. But we continue now with your calls. 301-230-0980 is the phone number, 301-230-0980. Let's go to Ross in Tampa. Ross, thanks for calling. You are on the Hoffman Show. What's up, dude?
Man, long time no talk, Craig. What's good in the hood?
Hey, I've been here the whole time. I don't know where you've been.
Man, I've been doing postal inspections, man. Them guys up in D.C., they ain't playing around. They don't want us making calls to 980 no more. But this isn't just any call. This is a redemption call for me. Because a year ago today, I got the rambling and the talking and the talking. You had to cut me off and hang up on me, and I was embarrassed. So I'm gonna be a little bit more smooth this time.
Okay.
Man, I heard it all day long, man. I just feel like the same people who may have a problem with this pick are the same people who are going to complain about Jaden not being upright if we didn't get him. It's like, you got to look at it, Craig. We watch football, man. These linemen go down all the time on freak accidents, the same way we lost Cosme. You know, Christian Darrisaw's injury. You're holding your own, and then your neighbor gets barreled into your kneecap, and then where's the death? No disrespect to the Tyler Dieters of the world and the Chris Pauls, but I think this was a real solid pick because we're investing in our future superstar quarterback. We gotta make these optimal moves. 61, I really don't know what direction we can go because I feel like we can go any direction outside of maybe, well, obviously quarterback, maybe tight end, and it makes sense. But the Adam Peters let him cook narrative, it's alive and strong. But, you know, I just like how I told Anthony this. I like how he keeps his coordinators in mind. Because let's face it, Cliff ain't going to be around for much long. So, like, you can get him in line too. Come on, Craig.
Hey. Yeah, if I'm Cliff, like, I'm good, bro. I'm not going anywhere unless I have to. I'm sure he's well compensated. And, you know, I think what a great story. And I love that the Commander's social team was able to get a photo and video of the actual note, if folks haven't seen this, that Cliff left in Adam's office. He went to go visit him during the week. Adam had stepped out, and he left him a note, said, "Stopped by. Please take the tackle out of Oregon. Thanks, Cliff." And he got his guy.
Imagine Ross, what Bruce Allen would have done in that situation. Sort of blew his nose with it.
Yeah, spilled a beer on it. That was probably a little bit too much, but we'll just keep it.
Oh, Craig, I got a question for you. I was going to DM you, but I figured I was going to call and ask you. Not all that right. I want this guy, but I just kind of want your take. First of all, who do you think we should get in the second round if you haven't disclosed it? And Isaiah Bond, does he get drafted this weekend?
That's a good question. All right, Ross, I'm going to let you hang up and listen. Appreciate the call as always. there's a bunch of dudes that I think are plausible at 61. I think Ifeanyi Oladejo is there. That's kind of the guy that I would most like to see fall. I'm also thinking that he could come off the board sooner rather than later tonight. You just don't get a guy that's that kind of athlete and twitch. It's kind of like what I said about Shamar Stewart yesterday. You just don't get a dude whose muscles have muscles, who's got real pass rush juice, that has the size, the speed, all the stuff that he does, and then he's just available for you later. And especially in Oladejo, a guy that plays really hard, and I think the character's good too. I would love to see Ifeanyi Oladejo somehow fall to 61. I just don't really see the path for him to fall to 61. Isaiah Bond's interesting for a multitude of reasons. One, there's this crazy off-the-field thing with him where he's got someone accusing him of a terrible thing, but he's got counter evidence. And, like, I'm not going to comment on who's did what. It's messy. And if I was a team, I wouldn't want to touch it. I'm just like, I don't want when my team said they drafted this guy for the ensuing discussion to be, and by the way, mess. That's not what I'm after. That's just my GM philosophy. Will that cost me talented people at times? Yes. But I also have never had a chance to sit down with Isaiah Bond. I don't know the kid. I've never talked to him. I don't know what his coaches say. I do know as a player, he's very intriguing. And I was talking to some folks over the last couple of weeks and, you know, to ask about Golden, and, you know, one team had some DBs in, and they were like, you know, Golden was, he was fine, but like Bond's the guy that scared us. That Texas offense was very Isaiah Bond focused. I also think you could say their offense got better when it became more Matthew Golden focused. So there's just a lot there with Bond. I think there's a good, like, he's electric enough on tape that it would not surprise me if he's a third round pick. I'd be kind of surprised if he's a second, but he is definitely a name to watch over the next couple of years to see if he can get his stuff straightened out and then ultimately unlock his potential. But Ifeanyi Oladejo is the other guy that I think I would look at. Let's go to our guy, Ford. Ford, thanks for calling. You are on the Hoffman Show. What's up, dude?
Hey, buddy. How are you?
I'm good. What you got on Josh Connerly?
Well, just a few things, and then, you know, as always, I'll hang up and listen. But, yeah, I love the pick. Probably been said a lot of times before, but you got to protect your most valuable asset. And Craig, I wouldn't be surprised if we don't see this type of behavior from Adam Peters and his staff year over year. I mean, just keep building through the trenches, kind of like Philadelphia just keeps building and adding people in the trenches, and it's just a smart way to do it, I think, when you have somebody like Jaden. And also, it was interesting. I don't know if you picked up on it, but on Tuesday in Adam's pre-draft presser, he kind of gave us a throwaway line. He gave us a little nugget that not many people, I was surprised none of the reporters circled back on it, but I think Nikki asked him a question that about Edge. He goes, yeah, Edge, and I'm sure you'll be asking me about offensive line and corner. And that was all he said. You know, and nobody came back, but I picked up on it. I was like, huh, offensive line and corner. This is a pre-draft presser. I'm sorry. So I kind of had a feeling Tuesday that he was kind of, they were considering, you know, along with their commander tag, et cetera, they were considering that position, a position of need as well, although, you know, us out here in the public didn't really see it as such. And the last thing I'll just say, Craig, is, you mentioned earlier, I'm continuing to be impressed with Adam and his staff and their intentionality. You know, they stayed the course. They bonded with everybody very quickly. Everybody buys in and is on the same page. And I trust him implicitly. So no matter who they pick tonight and over the weekend and what happens after the draft, I'm good because they've given me no reason other than to trust them implicitly. So I'd love to hear your view. Thanks.
Ford, I just simply say amen to pretty much everything you said. I appreciate that call. And I'll double click on one thing Ford said just to kind of veer it in a different direction, because I genuinely agree with everything he just said, and I don't feel the need to repeat it. But if you look at the best available, the quote-unquote best available, right? And it's funny because these insiders have to make their lists, and then all of a sudden maybe they learn something during the draft, or they learn something on, you know, this morning, and it's like, oh, that's why that guy's still available. Well, I would readjust my list. But if you look at the guys who were widely considered the best available still going into day two. I don't know how many of these guys had the commander tag. And I'm not going to go a full on, like, I tried to tell you, but like, there's a reason I kept bringing it up. And it's not because then I get to stand on a soapbox in a moral high ground and be like, I told you these are fine young. I don't know any of these guys. I don't know them from Adam. I do know Adam Peters. I mean, I don't know Adam Peters, but I know you get the point. I don't personally know Adam Peters. We're not friends, but I know Adam Peters and Dan Quinn care about the character. And they care about the competitor and they care about this stuff at a very, very high level. And so when people would be like, I don't know, James Pierce Jr., I'm like, no, they're not taking that guy. I had a hard time believing that Mike Green was their guy. The more I, frankly, even yesterday, and I feel bad because I talked about Will Johnson and then was doing more homework. And I was like, I wish I hadn't said all that stuff I said about Will Johnson. Like, the more I dug into Will Johnson, the more I had questions, not just because of the injuries, but I was like, man, your 2024 tape looks like you were making business decisions. Like you just weren't in it in the same way that you were in 2023. Nick Amanwori, like I'm very intrigued by Nick Amanwori. I think he's apparently his teammates love him, super cerebral, but he doesn't deliver the thump in the way that a Jeremy Chinn did, in the way that a Will John or a Will Harris does. Like, there are certain things they look for where I can, if you give me a name, flip on the tape and know if I have access to, you know, someone's legitimate all 22 and just be like, within 10 plays, I can tell you if that guy's a commander from the tape. And then I want to go know, like a guy like Mike Green, I would tell you yes, based off the tape. And then you go off the field and you're like, oh no, that's in his report. I'm good on that. And the other best available guys, I don't know that any of them outside of maybe Ezeraku would have gotten the commander's tag. And I don't know that Ezeraku would have gotten it. And I do think he's a tier down for them in terms of the eval anyway. So it kind of becomes irrelevant. 301-230-0980 is the phone number. We'll wrap up the hour with more of your calls on Josh Connerly next. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app, streaming live on YouTube too at the Team 980. Let's keep it rolling with the calls on the 2025 NFL Draft at 301-230-0980 with Noel. Noel, what's up, dude? Thanks for calling. What you got on Josh Connerly and what the Commanders did last night?
Hey, Craig. Thanks for taking my call. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday, indeed.
Yeah, thanks, man. It was a really solid pick. I mean, just really solid. You know, not the most beautiful, like, you know, out there pick as far as, like, getting an edge, but really, really solid. And clearly the team is considering Jaden Daniels so much, which I can truly appreciate. And the two things that stand out to me is, one, they are really actively trying to avoid a regression with what C.J. Stroud had last year with their O-line, because their O-line was not that great, and ironically, Tunsil is now on our team, but I digress. And then secondly, correct me if I'm wrong, it seems apparent that we're probably going to pick up a running back at some point in this draft. So had we gotten an edge rusher maybe in the first round or second round with one of those two picks, we probably would have needed to get a running back that accentuated playmaking ability. But now that we added another tackle to add to the O-line, or if they're going to move him to guard, whatever that might be, whatever they decide to do, it gives us the freedom to really just pick the best running back available based off of Adam's board. So I think it's a win-win, really. And I'm looking forward to the rest of the results for the draft. And yeah, it's solid pick, really solid. I like it a lot. So
thanks, Noel. Yeah, I think to an extent that's almost even overcomplicating it. Like, I think Josh Connerly was the best player on the board. I kind of think it might have been by a lot. So they took him. Like, it doesn't have to be always 3D chess. Like, all these other factors are nice bonuses, but they're icing, not cake. Like, this isn't the milk, eggs, and the flour. It's like, no, Josh Connerly was a pre-made cake mix, and all you had to do was, like, add water and bake or something. I don't know how many cake mixes are just add water. None of the bakers yell at me. Bark! Anyway, the point is, Anthony, did you get that reference? You don't watch Great British Bake Off, do you?
I do not.
You should. It's just, it's pure British joy. I think you would love that show.
Maybe.
Only one way to find out. You got a homework assignment this weekend. In the middle of NHL, NBA playoffs, and the NFL draft, you have to watch Great British Bake Off. Anyway, the point is absolutely none of that. I think Josh Connerly is just flat out the best player for the Commanders. And the fact that there's a very deep running back class, not a very particularly deep offensive tackle class, and a fairly deep edge class is a very nice perk. And I think this is also where the run on corners happens. You might miss it because I think there could be five or six guys that go, but there's a couple names that I'll throw at you now. Like Quincy Riley, they've met with the kid four times, including a top 30 visit. Now, is he probably a little rich at 61 and he's probably gone at 128? Probably for both, but like maybe he's around at 128. Or maybe they can trade off of 61, pick up another fourth, and pick him up in the 70s. Like something like that could definitely be possible. And then even like there's a couple other names, a couple other positions. You're like, oh, they met with him four times. Basil Tootin, the running back out of Virginia Tech, they met with him four times, including a top 30 visit. So there certainly are guys that I think are probably higher on their list that at the very least they're very familiar with. They wanted to get to know. Let's go to Ray. Ray, thanks for calling. You are on the Hoffman Show.
What's up, Craig? How you doing, man?
I'm good, bro. How are you?
I'm doing fine, man. Happy Friday to you. Hey, look here. I think that was a real good pick, man. You got the number five offensive lineman total on the board, on the whole draft board. And if he was number one lineman on their board, man, they made the right pick. Because at 29, I mean, you can't go wrong with it. As far as the what they're going to do with this pick right here, I mean, there's a whole lot of ways they could do it, man. There's no sense in reaching for a running back because my number one running back was Omarion Hampton, but he's gone. You know, everybody else is, you know, like one and a half tier. Because after Gentry and Hampton, they're ones and everybody else is one and a half. Tootin, good running back, but he got to hold on to the ball. I wouldn't mind having him because once he gets in the open, nobody's going to catch him. But the player that you need to watch out for who they should have their eye on is a kid from Texas. And he's a safety. His name is Andrew Makuba. He's 6 feet, 190, and he's a straight baller. You hear me? A baller. They get him, they won't have to look for another safety, just like they won't have to look for another offensive lineman for a good while. And as far as the edge is concerned, I know everybody wants these flashy edges. I'm going to tell you something. It's an edge on the board nobody is talking about. He's not flashy, but he's real productive. His name is David Walker from Central Arkansas, a la Monty Coleman's alma mater. They need to look at that kid, man. The kid can straight ball for an edge rusher. He's real good. Do everybody want to get these flashy names and everything? No, get the ballers. Those two guys there, man, and those three guys that I said, if you can reach for them, I mean, if you can get them, you don't have to reach for them. You can wait for probably the fourth round. All of them will be there except for Makuba. Makuba, if you can get him in the second round, if he's there, if you don't get Jaden Higgins, because that's my man. I got to take Jaden Higgins. Jaden Higgins is my number one receiver, for real. I got to get him because he's a taller Terry McLaurin, a mold Terry McLaurin, but he's just taller. But all those kids, man, they can flat out ball and I'm gone. Bye.
All right. Ray the Scout joined us here on the Team 980. Makuba's interesting. Nobody's talking about David Walker. Anthony. Was that the first time David Walker's name was mentioned on this radio show today?
I thought you were talking about David Walker, my classmate.
No. He could be, though, because you ain't that much older than the David Walker from Central Arkansas.
Yeah.
We literally talked about him 30 minutes ago. I'd hope as hell that he was productive. He played in an FCS school, and he's 25 years old. He's also super sought off, shorter guy. Like, I'm not telling you he can't play. Like he, it's actually, I got to pull this up because it's one of my favorite write-ups. I found it this morning. Actually, you want to know what? We talk about David Walker in the Take Command segment we're about to play. And the really hilarious line from Dane Brugler in The Beast is in there. So instead of reading it to you twice, I'm just going to get us to break on time. And then when we come back, you'll hear the funny line about David Walker. Jaden Higgins being a taller Terry McLaurin. That is a wild-ass take. Makuba's interesting, though. Who does Logan think that we should take? That is what you're going to hear next on the Team 980. But at least we got Ray's take in.
Baseball's all about the games, and the best in daily gaming is on the MLB app, where every day starts with new puzzles and challenges. Test your skills with MLB Pickle, the ultimate mystery player challenge, and Immaculate Grid, where stats and strategy collide. Or chase the $5.6 million jackpot and beat the streak, presented by BetMGM. And for an all-new spin on fantasy sports, there's Spinball, the game's official home for games, is on the MLB app. MLB trademarks used with permission. No purchase necessary. Restrictions apply. For official rules, go to MLB.com/play/official rules.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Clint Yates joins us at 5:30 talking about Shedeur Sanders' slide into the second round. But right now, Logan Paulson, Take Command style in just a moment as today's edition of Not My Beat. Talking about what the Commanders do tonight, round two of the NFL draft. We've got coverage with Denton Day and Linnell Willingham coming up a little bit later on after Nats and Mets here on the Team 980. But real quick before we let you hear the conversation I had this morning with Logan, who's got just the best depth of knowledge of anyone in DC media when it comes to these prospects. Was there any pressure, or is there any pressure on Adam Peters tonight to go defense after going offense in round one, especially considering, the defense is kind of what most people consider the weaker side of the ball on his roster?
I think it's just looking at our board and picking the highest player on our board. So I don't think there's any pressure to pick a defensive guy, except I'd feel bad for Joe Witt a little bit, but he was extremely supportive of this pick too. He's a great team guy, all jokes aside. But no, there's no real pressure to do that, to force a pick on the defensive side of the ball. It's just trying to pick the best commander for us.
Sorry, Joe, but best player available it is. So who are some of those best players that might be available? Let's get into it on Take Command.
I think when you look at kind of the people that are available, you know, like the positions of strength, so just kind of going through the big board right now, I think there's a kind of a good staple of receivers that fit this build. I think there's one offensive tackle. I think there's one or two guards that would fall in this bucket. But then I was looking at edge rushers, and I was like, gosh dang, like you got Donovan Ezeraku, Nick Scordon, Landon Jackson, JT Tuimoloau, Femi Oladejo, Prince Lumanyelen, Brandon Swinson, Jordan Birch, Jack Sawyer, and David Walker that I think could all reasonably go at 61. So that's a lot of people. What is that, like to 9 people, 10 people? And then you got a couple defensive tackles, probably 4 or 5. You got 2 interior linebackers I think could go. And then you got a couple corners, right? And I think when cornerbacks and safety. So you got Ravel, you got Trey Amos, you got Benjamin Morris, Xavier Watson, Azari Thomas, Jacob Parrish, and Kevin Winston Jr. And I think that's all very reasonable there. So to me, looking at kind of the strength of the draft in the second round, I think you could maybe go receiver, but those edge rushers seem very, very deep. And then the defensive back kind of conglomerate feels very kind of dense at this moment too. So basically, if you're, you know, you're worried that they didn't take a defensive player in the first round, they didn't at a corner or a defensive lineman, like there's definitely a very real option for that to happen here in the second round of 61.
And you have the ultimate fallback of running back in this draft, where only 2 go in the first round. So no Trevion Henderson, no Caleb Johnson, no anybody else popping up. So you have the full slew of running backs you expected. You have an extra safety because I think we mostly expected Emmanuel. We have 2 extra edges, Ezeraku and Green. Yeah. Now Green, I don't know at what point, like, is it, hey, we're not going to take him in the first round? Or like, there are definitely going to be teams that are like, we're not taking him at all. So how far does he fall? And where does Washington fit on that? Obviously, the Will Johnson thing is someone's going to take the risk eventually. So I think it is pretty fascinating. In terms of guys that went on 30 visits, that are still on the board and potentially available at 61. I think it's worth mentioning, Logan, although it would be a mistake to think that they are exclusively picking from this list.
No, but just like, I just think it's the reason, like we were talking about this earlier, like the reason we're just calling attention to this is that these are people that they have talked to. Like Mike Green came on a visit, right? Does that mean they're going to draft him? It doesn't look like it, right? But like right. there are some guys here that I think are interesting names that, having watched a lot of film with them, having talked to people about them, I think probably fit that Commanders tag fairly acutely. So that's kind of why we're talking about them.
For sure. And, 30 visits can be, hey, we want to talk to you. Adam literally said this last night. We can talk to you and confirm what it can deny what we thought. But confirm doesn't mean that we like you. It could confirm that we don't like you.
Right.
That we brought you in for a reason because we had questions and the answers did not alleviate those concerns. So, of guys that came on 30 visits, let's see here. Ezeraku came on a 30 visit. So I doubt he's still available at 61 and we don't know what they found. Trey Harris, receiver from Ole Miss, is that too rich for him?
No, I think that's probably right in line, you know. But I do think at the press conference yesterday, Adam was like, "Yeah, someone said, you know, what about defense at 61? He's like, "Yeah, maybe." You know, obviously, like we're not going to rule anything out, but I would feel bad for Joe Wood Jr. if we didn't pick a defensive. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think that it felt like obviously
I think they would like to go defense, but in that same quote, he's like, "We're going to trust the board." Like, 100%. And it's something that I really appreciate about them is they don't look at the draft is a 2025 thing. Like how do we build the best football team moving forward? And if they know that their entire receiver room outside of Luke McCaffrey and Terry McLaurin, once he signs his extension, they all could be gone next year. So like taking a receiver is not crazy. Caleb Johnson, the running back out of Iowa, Oladejo, the edge out of UCLA. How far down is Quincy Riley on the corner list? Because they met with him like four times, including a 30 visit.
So I have not, I'm going to be perfectly honest, I have not watched him yet. I get these lists from like PFF, you know, and he was not on the list at the beginning of the season, but I've heard that they do like him. And again, like he felt like, at least I looked him up last night, like he's in like that fifth round, like 120 kind of range. So fourth round, I guess that would be. But, you know, like if you really like him, potentially that's a spot for him.
So here's why I'm going to mention him as a watch out, even though he could very much wind up there. Dane's got him as a third, fourth round guy. But listen to the guys that are around him. So he's his 11th corner. Noah Williams is his eighth quarter. Jacob Parrish is his ninth quarter. Benjamin Morrison is his 10th quarter. Darian Porter is his 12th corner.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. It's a dense group there. And if he's in the same range as like even Noah Williams and Jacob, like Jacob Parrish and Noah Williams are two of my favorite defensive backs in this class. And so the fact that he's sitting right there, I kind of would cluster them in the same group. But yeah, that's very illuminating for sure.
Jonas Sanker from Virginia, the safety.
Oh, the safety. Yeah.
He was at an 30. They met with him a ton. I think he might have been a four guy? Let's see. Yep, four different. So that's like, you know, I don't have the list back in front of me again, but like Senior Bowl, Combine, Team Pro Day, 30 visit. But like definitely 30 visit, and they visited with him four times. He's Dane's sixth safety, third round grade from Brugler.
And I kind of went through, and I do this thing, because like last year they had a type. They had long arm. It's the same kind of thing they did with Connerly, right? They have to meet certain athletic thresholds, like 34-inch arms, like fast 40, like blah, 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 blah. So that's kind of how you pick the offensive lineman, right? They met with Anthony Belton, who like is an offense. He's like, he ran a 5'1". He's got 35-inch arm. Like, you know what I mean? Like they've got a kind of box they have their offensive lineman in. And with the safeties, I remember looking like Tyler Owens, 33-inch arms. Dominique Hampton, 33-inch arms. They like the length. And a lot of safety coaches that I talk to around the league, they like the length of their defensive backs because it allows them to play man coverage. And I think he's 32.5, which was one of the longer arm lengths of defensive backs at the combine this year. Is that right?
6 foot and a quarter, 205. 32.5-inch arms. Ran a 4.48 with a 1.61 split, 36.5-inch vertical, but a 10.8 broad jump.
What was his wingspan? Is it on there? I don't want to put you on the spot.
Yeah, it is. 78 inches at his pro day.
Yeah, so like he's a big safety, right? And like he plays at and around the line of scrimmage. He's very productive. He's physically, he's a little stiff to me, to my eye, but I remember watching him being like, this guy feels like a you know, kind of a Jeremy Chinn guy that has a little bit more athletic upside. So I think that's a really interesting pick. And I do think 61 is not out of the question there if you really, really like the prospect.
Yeah, and especially, again, if you're he's in that big, extra large bucket because you don't pick again until 128. He's probably not going to be there. Last guy, Belton, by the way, did come on a 30 visit. I just didn't mention him because I would be stunned if they went offensive line again.
They might go offensive line another point in this draft, but like going at 29 and 61, I mean, I like Belton a lot. Like he's one of...
At that point, we start screaming, what in the Atlanta Falcons is going on here? Got to get one in. David Walker is the last guy that I'll mention. Unless you got anything. Jalen Smith, corner out of Southern Cal. He's probably a little bit lower.
Good football player, but I think a little bit lower. They had another interesting name on there. He was like...
Carlin Vigors, Louisiana Monroe.
Yes. Yeah, he's an interesting guy. 6'2", 200 pounds, good length. Feels like in that fourth round range. But again, if you love him and you think he's anywhere from the 61 to 128, he's on the board here. But I do think the two edge rushers that they mentioned, they get me kind of, I get the warm fuzzies for those guys, right? Because we've talked about Femi Oladejo. He's a Bruin. But I told this story to Kyme this morning. We were talking on the phone. And like, I remember, I don't know if I told this on this show, but there was a moment in the Senior Bowl practice where they were doing like a red zone kind of team run period. And he was on the field or he was on the sideline. And someone made a tackle and he like sprinted on the field, dapped everybody up, and just the defensive energy, it was kind of a flat practice, just went through the freaking roof. You know what I mean? So next play, tackle for loss, he's talking mess to everybody. And you're just like that, like I get tingles just thinking about it, right? Like that gets me excited. And again, he's making a transition from off-ball linebacker to edge. The edge stuff at the Senior Bowl was excellent. And not the best bender, but the competitor, the toughness, like he had a period where it was like, we wanted to see you do off ball linebacker coverage stuff. And so he just popped over and started covering running backs. And I was like, that's what you, in terms of versatile, competitive, tough, love it. And then David Walker is this little short, sought, you know, I like traitsy, big, tall edge rushers. So he's 6 foot. He's almost 270. He's got 31 and a quarter inch arms, 3/4. So not a big guy, but I'm being totally honest here. He did not lose one pass rush rep at the Senior Bowl. Ooh. So like, just, he's got great power. He walks people back into the quarterback and he feels like a guy that could have 10 sacks in the NFL. Like his rush profile is very unique. It's short, sawed off, think like Brandon Graham type guy. But both those guys to me at 61 are like very, very, I would be stoked if either one of them came. I'd be like on the show. I'd be like, yeah, I wouldn't be doing Fred Davis. You know what I mean? But I'd be pretty stoked about both those guys.
You also got guys like Jordan Birch, who's obviously a teammate at Oregon of Connery. By the way, we'll wrap up with this because I know we're running short on time here. Logan and I said, we'll try to go like 30 minutes. We don't need to do a full 45 minute episode. Here we are 41 minutes in. Classic take
classic
command
us.
Style. How about this from the Beast from David Walker's profile? When studying FCS tape, you shouldn't need to know a player's number, and that is absolutely true with Walker, who quickly jumps out as the best player on the field, even on Central Arkansas's terrible purple and gray field. Yeah, game throwing shots.
It is purple and gray.
It's just like bombs. I don't care. Central Arkansas. But, play on
and
green
you
grass.
Watch him, you watch him at Central Arkansas, and you're like, this is
not
like,
fair.
This is ridiculous. Like,
I will say with him, he's also like 25 years old.
Is he really? I didn't realize I was that old.
Yeah, six-year senior. He's 24.89 on the age. So we're going to be 25 before the season starts. So I hope if you're a 25-year-old playing at Central Arkansas that you absolutely are killing people. That's if you're an NFL prospect. I would hope.
How old was Femi Oladejo?
Oladejo is not even 22. He's like 21 and a half.
Young, spry, got good joints still.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's get that going.
Birch is like 23. Jackson's 22. Scorton's the fun one. He's not even 21 yet.
Dude, I doubt he's there at 61, but I like him. Landon Jackson, love him. Scorton, love him. Femi Oladejo, love him. Dave Walker, love him. And so the fact there's four dudes that you're just like, and again, there's other guys that I'm not even mentioning, like the kid from LSU, I really like
Swinson. What about Josiah Stewart, Michigan? I've heard some people that really like
him. Interesting because he ran a 4.9 at his pro day.
Whew.
And he's not a big man. And so he has some juice. It shows up for sure. But I would be, you know, we talk about the Donovan Zaraku, kind of like, do you have the athletic upside to rush at the NFL level? Maybe it was a 4.89. It was very, very slow for a guy that does not look that way on film.
Interesting. All right. Well, that's There's a bunch of names that could become Commanders, or someone else will.
Want more from Craig and Logan? Subscribe now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. More Hoffman Show next on the Team 980 and the free Odyssey app.
Coming up at 5:30, we will get to our conversation with Clint Yates on Shedeur Sanders. 5:45, some other Anthony, I refuse to call them winners and losers in the NFL draft because I actually hate we don't know who won and lost till like 5 years from now. So calling them that is dumb.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I don't know.
But we can do hat taps and head scratchers. Or hat tips and head scratchers.
Okay.
Like, hey, I see you. I like what you're doing. Or like, I don't get that one. By the way, I think that's an original thing. I don't think I've heard that anywhere else. I don't think that's, I'm pulling that from the recesses of my mind because I've seen it. And we should write that down because I feel like that's a good segment title.
Okay.
Book hat tips and head scratchers. Or head scratchers and hat tips. Which one do we like better? You got till 5:45 to decide.
All right.
I need you to decide right now who you want in the second round of the NFL draft for the Commanders. Anybody that jumps out at you that you're like, Lord, please.
I mean, edge would definitely be something or a position that I feel like we should address. And if it's not edge, then corner. I think we do need to go defensive unless Trevion Henderson falls to two.
I mean, I think running back is definitely interesting, and there's definitely a good chance that there's a very, very good and intriguing back that's on the board at 61. The thing is with running back, the flavors are so different.
Yeah, I think we can wait on those.
Right.
Unless it's Trevion, though.
But, like, that's your favorite. And I'm not saying that I would not also make the same move. What I am telling you is there are other people who like other backs more, and that makes trying to figure out the value piece a lot harder. I kind of think their guy's Tootin from Virginia Tech just because they met with him a zillion times. And that, like, I think a lot of their 30 visits are spent on guys they want to just confirm and have a good time, have a good feel, have a good vibe with, especially those guys they bring in late to the Topgolf visit. Now, there's guys like Mike Green where I think they're bringing you in because they got a real question. They want to sit you down and talk to you face-to-face and be like, hey, bro, like, what the hell happened here? What's up? And then they don't like the answer, and so they pass on you. Ezra Aku, they brought in for a 30 visit. They obviously liked Josh Connerly more. So I don't know what that 30 visit was necessarily about. I also think like Ezeraku could have been the guy last night if Connerly wasn't on the board potentially. Because, you know, Adam said I didn't think that Connerly was going to be on the board for us. He was starting to sweat after Banks went off the board at 9. It was like, oh God, are the Bears going to take him at 10? Luckily for Adam, the Bears spent $1 zillion on a zillion offensive linemen in free agency. And so they elected to take Colson Loveland, the tight end out of Michigan. But I think there's the edge guys are definitely interesting, and there's like 4 or 5. I don't think Skorton falls that far. Maybe Oladejo does. I think Ezeraku still being there helps because that's going to push down. Green's the wild card just because, like, obviously if a team is like, we're not taking a first-round pick on that. Because to me, there's three things for Green. There's like three tiers for Mike Green, right? He's off your board entirely, which I think teams like Philadelphia – not on their board. I would not be surprised if here he's not on their board. It doesn't matter. There could be 700 rounds of the NFL draft, and they would not take Mike Green. Because Howie Roseman said, if you've got a violence against women, you know, situation on your player card, and we do our due diligence, and we don't think it's false, we're like, there's legitimacy to it at all, I don't even watch the tape. So Howie Roseman, in theory, and anybody else who thinks like him, which he's not the only one, he just said it on Todd McShay's show and got a lot of praise for it, as he should. It doesn't matter what you think of the player. You don't know what you think of the player because you don't even bother watching the tape. And so he's literally not on their board. There are other teams that will say, we're not going to spend a first round pick, but eventually the talent becomes enough that like it's worth the risk because we're not necessarily making a moral judgment. We are making a football judgment of we are scared that this could happen again and you are going to be unavailable to us, suspended or jailed. And if that's the case, then, or we feel like we have to cut you for PR reasons, that's not worth a first rounder, but by the second, third, fourth rounder, that's worth it to us. And there are teams that will do that. And so if there's a team like that in the second round that feels like that for Mike Green, he could definitely come off the board. And if he does, that pushes Femi Oladejo and maybe Azaraku, you know, Nick Scorton. It pushes all those guys down. So there's a bunch of teams that need edges and some who didn't attack that. Obviously, a team like Tampa, talk about head scratcher. Like, I didn't think there was a team that could draft a Mecca Ibuka, and I'd be like, what are you doing? But like, Tampa kind of is that team. They're ahead of Washington. You know, Detroit is ahead of Washington. They went defensive line yesterday, but they need an edge. So it's definitely going to be interesting to see. And then I wonder if there's a run on corners. And Maxwell Hairston was a guy that I thought could go in the second round. Instead, he goes in the first, but we all thought Will Johnson would go in the first until the very last second. Now he's going to go in the second, assuming that he's not red flagged medically and has a DeJuan Jones-esque slide, third, fourth round. So, I think that the positions that Washington needs are very likely to be the top one. The other name that I'll throw out there that I'm mad that Logan and I did not talk about is Carson Schwesinger, the linebacker out of UCLA. I think they like him a lot because his name keeps coming up from people like John Kime. And I know they don't need a linebacker, but it's the kind of thing where if he's on the board somehow at 61, I think there's definitely a chance he's their highest ranked guy and they could go that direction. So just, you know, stick that in your back pocket. I think there's a really good chance he's off the board by 61 anyway. But just, you know, some things to consider, some names to know. We know they're not going to take Shedeur Sanders. One, he's not going to be available at 61. I don't think. Like, although, I'm telling you, if the Browns pass on him, I don't know where he goes because the Saints don't like him. They didn't even do, like, a full homework assignment on him, according to Daniel Jeremiah last night. So who knows? But we know he ain't coming here. Why is he still on the board? What happened? Clint Yates knows Shedeur real well, and Dion real well. He's done a lot of coverage of that program over the last couple of years. Clinton's going to join his first Friday visit, talking Shedeur Sanders slide next on the Team 980. Thoughtfit Show, we're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app and streaming live on YouTube too, of course, at the Team 980, where you see television and radios. Clinton Yates. Yates, of course, host of Clinton and Friends on ESPN Radio. Morning time, you can check it out on the ESPN app. Hello, sir. Happy Friday.
Hey, buddy. How are you? How was your draft day?
Draft day was busy. It was fun, though. Like, I felt energized all day yesterday. Sure. We did an extra hour of the show. I did live stream and then take command stuff last night. It was way past my bedtime. I mean, right. Again, if the Commanders want to continue being good and my punishment is one day a year, I got to stay up in it a little extra later, I'll take it. But it was
you didn't have
it was
to be
a long,
in Green
fun
Bay,
day.
Wisconsin. You know what I'm saying?
Bingo, bingo. People kept asking me if I was going to go this year because I was in Detroit last year. And I was like, last year they had the second pick. We knew who they were going to take. That guy was there. And it's an airport that is actually fairly popular to fly in and out of.
Sure.
That
not happening in Wisconsin.
None of that is true this year for the Commanders and or the city of Green Bay, where I'm, you know, apparently the locals have gotten mad that everyone just makes cheese curd jokes. I'm like, you brought it upon yourselves.
Yeah, what? You're Wisconsin. You're supposed to be making cheese curd jokes. I don't get it.
I said this last night on the live stream. I was like, every single city gets reduced to this three things, no matter if it's not a small town America thing. Like, oh, hey, look, it's a Jets-Giants game in New York City. Here's the Empire State Building, even though they play in New Jersey.
Right. Well, I mean, it is a small town America thing, though, because, hello, Green Bay, Wisconsin is a small town in America.
No, like, but I'm saying it's like a sports
I see what
thing.
You're saying, but, like, if you're actually a small town, you cannot be mad about the thing that people actually know you for as a small town. It's crazy.
Right. Anyway. And I did find it pretty funny that Ashton Gentry, who went to Boise State, was like, yeah, there's not a whole lot to do here. So, Green Bay, you've been a lovely host. There's some stuff you're just going to have to deal with. Welcome to the limelight, kids.
Bingo.
We're going to talk about Shedeur Sanders, though, who did not go last night. The Colorado quarterback, who you spent a fair amount of time with over the last couple of years covering that program, falls out of the first round. First of all, do you agree with that characterization, that he fell out of the first round?
I do, but I also don't necessarily think that's the worst case scenario. Now, the only reason I believe that characterization is because, well, they had put those expectations on him. Prime himself had talked about this. And, you know, I this is a situation where for once I actually feel bad for the young man, because part of the issue was twofold. number one, hype has two elements to it. Number one, it can giveth and it can taketh away. And in this situation, he was kind of paired up with Travis Hunter as this kind of package scenario coming out of Colorado. They never were going to have the same path to NFL greatness. Not even close. Number one, because Shador plays quarterback, which is an entirely different position as far as how it's scrutinized. And number two, because Travis is just a better football player. And like, that's not some like major argument between other people. So the idea that like Travis was going to go top five and it was just going to be kind of a matter of time before Shador got picked, I always thought was unfair to the quarterback. And it showed up yesterday, particularly in a draft where, you know, quarterback need was not necessarily at the premium it once was. I mean, the position overall wasn't highly picked outside of Cam Ward at the top. So that combination of things, I think, led to kind of not a humiliating situation, but certainly an unfortunate one regarding a kid that's got to put himself on cameras in front of the world, ultimately to not have that kind of dream fulfilled, if you want to call it that, in one night.
For sure. Shador's such an interesting prospect. And I've said this on the show before, but I will admit it here for anyone who hasn't heard it. Like, I didn't study the quarterbacks this year. I just flat out didn't study them because for the first time in most people's listening lives, Washington knows who their quarterback is for the foreseeable future.
Wasn't necessary.
I guess we thought in 2012 we had that figured out with Robert. But even then, like, Kirk was the backup. They weren't going to go quarterback in 2013, 2014 on through Cousins' time here. But like, I knew that I don't have to look at these quarterbacks, so I didn't spend time on, especially because there's so many other guys to watch. But Shador is 6'1", like 215. His arm is not amazing. He's not a great athlete. Like, he's good at a bunch of stuff, but good doesn't necessarily get you drafted in the first round. And so the idea that he's a second round prospect or even a third rounder, like, is actually probably the correct football thing. The thing that I'm more interested in asking you about though, Clinton, is there's then all the stuff that, like, you have multiple people. They were like, that's the worst interview I've ever had. His board work wasn't good. Yeah. You know, there's an entitlement where, you know, he's talking about, I want input on the playbook. I think some of that stuff can be spun, but some of that I think is very real. And I'm curious, as someone who knows him and kind of, you know, understands his vibe, how you read a lot of those quotes and the things that come out.
I think all of that is very real. This also comes with the caveat that I say all the time, which is that quarterback is the worst coach position in the league. Meaning, if you've got a problem with him being this way, then maybe the problem is with you in terms of how you approach things. I'm not saying that outright. I'm saying that I can understand why certain teams are saying, this guy can't go this high on our board. It creates too much of a leverage situation. We don't know how to handle it anyway in terms of what we actually think he's going to do. We're just not doing it. That makes sense to me. Does that directly translate to what I think his actual talent level is? I don't know, but that's why the draft is such a goofy operation to begin with. There's so many other factors as to why certain people go certain places. I will say this. You talk about the measurables. You talk about sort of what you look at when you're thinking about who does what. And like, yeah, Shador Sanders has the skill to be an excellent system quarterback in the NFL. This is your reminder that the greatest quarterback in the history of the NFL was effectively a great system quarterback. All these ideas that teams have where people have to have booming stats off the break in order to be considered the top guy. I think this is part of the problem with how people coach their quarterbacks to begin with. Maybe you do want to get a guy that can just kind of handle the lights and is smart enough to be able to get into different systems and just do what they are told as they develop, as opposed to somebody who you've got to rearrange your entire playbook for because that's their skill set already. That's where I think there's a philosophical issue that is really fascinating for me. And people act like I'm crazy because I keep mentioning Tom Brady all the time. And I say the only reason I mention that guy is because if you took away if you had them both play and you looked at them in terms of like graphical representations of they are, they're kind of boring guys that don't really get around the pocket a lot. They just make good decisions on lower, occasionally a deep ball or so, and then they just don't make mistakes. If that's the kind of player you think you can develop a quarterback into, that's where a Shador Sanders makes sense for you. It's not necessarily going to be the guy that you say, I need him to stretch the field. I need him to be able to do it with his feet. No. No, 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 no. That's not the player he was ever going to be just because it happened to be a little bit of that at Colorado. And I think that gulf is what the hard part is for a lot of NFL teams.
Yeah, no, I think there's definitely a lot of points there. I mean, Brady ultimately wound up being one of the great pocket movers of all time. Like, obviously, he couldn't get out of the pocket, and it's something that is a concern with Shador. Brady was also had prototypical height, but also, like, let's not pretend like he was some super prospect because he was a sixth round. Like, we all know he was pick 199. Yeah. So, you know, I think what you're saying is more important to swallow than it is to try to pick apart. I think the other part of that, though, is who are you as a kid and who are you as a man and who are you as a professional? And I think that is where, and again, I think your point is one that should be taken seriously. This might say something more about the coaches than the kid. But if you're the coach and making it, you have to feel comfortable with the kid to say, okay, you don't have the rocket arm. You don't have the raw materials. You don't have the size. Are you going to put in the work to be so good at the craft that you're going to succeed anyway? And unfortunately, the way Shador rubs off on people, I don't think people leave those meetings feeling warm and fuzzy. And ultimately, they're the one with the pick. And I think that is also in part why we land where we are today, where he's available this evening for selection on day two.
Right. But that also depends on what you're looking for immediately out of the player. And this is, again, where I get to the strength of a program, the quality of a franchise. And I'm going to give you an example of where I think this could work at the end of me explaining this. Okay. If you want a guy that's going to come in and prove something to you regarding whatever you think their talent should be, and that's like more important to you than whether or not they can develop at a rate that you're determining, okay. But also,
well, I think, hold on, real quick. Much, I think those things are tied, though. Is like
they are.
Your rate of development is going to depend on the work. It's not about proving
it.
It's about
will you
get there.
I don't necessarily know that they are as tied. And how to explain this? This is part of the problem, in my personal opinion, with how a lot of these teams look at things. So throw kids in the fires. They won't have any sort of clear demarcation of what makes sense for development. And then all of a sudden, it's like, oh, you weren't working hard enough. It's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. What was the actual goal here? I'll just use Jackson Dart as an example. Okay, you got Russell Wilson there. You got Jameis as the backup. Because of the way that the coach and the GM are fighting for their jobs, if Russell Wilson starts to suck, are you just going to throw Jackson Dart in there and then all of a sudden say, well, the development didn't go. The kid wasn't working hard enough, blah, blah, blah. Like, I don't know. You know what I mean? And I like Jackson Dart a lot. I think he is a flat out better quarterback than Shador Sanders. And I don't think that's really particularly stressful to say. But what I'm saying is, and this is the now is when I'll use the example. If he goes to a team like the Los Angeles Rams, that has their system that they have. They've got a quarterback who's a veteran. They aren't worried about a second or third round pick suddenly coming in to make them something other than what they are. Is that going to be a system that he can thrive in? Whether or not this idea of are you working hard enough or not, do you fit into the system is actually what is going to matter in that situation. And I think he's got the IQ to do that. He's played in five different offenses since he's been in college because Prime loves running through offensive coordinators. I don't think it's going to be an IQ thing. I don't think it's going to be a work ethic thing. It's going to be an expectation thing versus a trust in yourself thing. And that's why I think the Rams would actually be a pretty good team for him to go to.
Yes.
On a lot of levels. Not that a lot of other quarterbacks wouldn't do well in that scenario, but specifically for him, that would be a very interesting scenario under a coach who is self-confident, who has done it in different ways with different types of quarterbacks. Absolutely. Absolutely.
I totally agree that I don't think there's a better fit. I mean, look, if I was a quarterback anywhere, I'd want to go play for Sean McVay.
Right.
But I think specifically for Shador, for all of these reasons, Sean is right. Clint Yates with us for just another minute here on the Hoffman Show. Last thing I'll ask you, though, is something that I actually don't worry about in LA as much, but I will rely, lean on your relationship with Prime and, you know, professional relationship with Prime here to answer this. If I am a team that's not LA, and maybe I'm not like Pittsburgh because Mike Tomlin doesn't give a rip, but I'm a lot of these other places and I'm drafting him knowing I'm going to start him as a backup. And there's a really good chance if I'm drafting him, my top option's not that good.
Mm-hmm.
How, like, are you concerned with, we'd call it meddling, pressure, whatever? Because I think that is another story that has emerged. And that's one where I'm like, Deion's been around the NFL a long time. Like Deion knows how this works. That feels a little off to me, but do you think that is that a concern you would have if you were a team?
I think honestly, that might be the number one reason why he didn't go in the first round. And not just because of like spite, but because there's that fifth extra year. And when you've got that fifth extra year that you've got to negotiate, if you go in the first round, is, you know, like it changes the nature of the relationship with how long you're going to have to deal with that. And I do think that there is something to be said where if you're a second round pick, that extra fifth year isn't part of it. therefore
the expectations change too.
The expectations change drastically, and you're not looking at a situation where prime is constantly looming over your head because you haven't invested the same amount of money into it. I don't even think it's personal at that point. I think it has as much to do with the function of how the CBA works as anything. And if you're looking to avoid a scenario where you're tied in potentially to something longer than you have to be, if it doesn't go right, you're just not going to do it because of the fact that he's got one of the greatest football players of all time as his, you know, mentor and his dad. So yeah, I do think that's related, but I don't think it's because any particular franchise is looking at that like, I can't have prime in my building. You're going to have prime in your building, and that's just part of it. It's just a matter of how you manage that.
I think that that's a big factor. If you're telling me I'm going to have that, you know, dad in the building, even if he's Deion Sanders, like coaches' ego. And again, I'm not saying this is necessarily a good thing, because I think if you're smart, you can welcome him into the building in the right ways and be like, hey man, like, you're Deion Sanders. I would like to lean on that resource, but like, I'm the head coach and you know how it is as a head coach. So we're going to have a respectful, good relationship, but you know how NFL coaches are with their egos. And there are dudes that are going to be like, ain't no way. And I do think like managing that is really important, because like, you don't want to feel like the young quarterback's dad is running the locker room with a bunch of grown men. Like, there's dynamics to manage there. But I think someone like Sean McVay could do that really well. I think there's a lot of other coaches who couldn't do it very well and don't want to deal with it. And thus, Shador Sanders might not even be on their board.
I don't disagree with you, but the idea of I don't want to deal with it is not a default definition of I might not get better. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's a situation where you might need somebody to walk in and say, hey, it might not even have anything to do with his own son. The guy knows what he's doing. He's been around. I mean, that's what I'm saying. You can look at it as a threat. You can look at it as also an additional resource and a football mind, even just on the smallest level, to let you know every once in a while, hey, what do you think about this? The guy doesn't have to take over everything. He's Deion Sanders, all right? He's got his own thing. And the assumption that he's going to want to walk in and usurp everybody in order to be able to contribute at all, I just think is the sign of somebody that is, I don't know, not you, I'm saying, but like a coach that is otherwise just overly insecure.
Yeah, no, 100%. And boy, is there some insecurity amongst NFL coaching staffs across this league. Correct. Clinton Yates, you can catch him on the radio, Clinton and Friends, weekdays in the morning. You can also listen on the ESPN app. Anything else? You did a lot of Star Wars talking today.
Yes, I was just about to say, I'm ready to stop talking on this microphone, Gregory. So I appreciate you and have a good weekend.
Just last thing to say, what if people want to listen to the Star Wars podcast? It's called
Never Tell Me the Odds. It's myself, Ryan McGee, and Arta Ocal. We did a full season breakdown in four different episodes of season two of Andor, starring Diego Luna.
Bingo. Clint Yates, everybody. It's Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We are always live as well on the free Odyssey app, streaming live on YouTube too at the Team 980. And coming up at 6 o'clock, our final segment today, as we will, of course, have the Nationals and Mets coming at you. 6:15 Nats on deck, 6:45 first pitch against the Metropolitans. We will go inside the NFC East. But other than that, Anthony, we're going to do right now real quickly, head scratchers and hat tips. So a hat tip, like, hey, nice job. I see you. Head scratchers. I'm going to give us one each. You know what my head scratcher is? And we have audio to go with it, right? You pulled that, Anthony?
Yeah, I have the audio.
Okay, excellent. So we'll get to that last. So I'll let you go first. You get your first hat tip, and I'll go my hat tip, and then you go your head scratcher, and then we'll go my head scratcher. So who's the team that you're like, hey, I see you, well done, in the first round of the NFL draft?
I think it started after the first pick. I think the Browns trading down to number five, trading back, getting Mason Graham, and then also acquiring a 2026 first. I think they did what needed to be done. They also didn't overthink it. Mason Graham, top five talent in this year's draft, like, I think it was a no-brainer going with the position. And I think they didn't decide to go with Travis because they already have, like, talent in the, you know, their secondary. It wasn't necessarily a position to need, but I think a guy like Mason Graham can definitely, you know, play alongside a Myles Garrett and make things a little bit easier for him. So,
yeah,
I say the Browns.
I actually like the other side of that trade. I was actually thinking about making that my hat tip. I'll go a different direction.
It worked for both sides. I agree.
Yeah, I respect the GM and the new administration, and they're doing kind of what Tennessee did to Will Levis last year. Like, Trevor Lawrence is a lot better than Will Levis, but it's like, hey, bro, we're going to find out if you can play quarterback. Because we're giving you Travis Hunter as a wide receiver, and we gave you some other dudes, and you got Calvin Ridley. Like, We're going to find out. Ridley's in Tennessee now. Like, we got some dudes. We got Brian Thomas Jr. We're going to find out if you can play. And if not, we're going to go in a different direction. But you got 1 year with Liam Cohen. And if not, we're going to make some moves. And I actually love that from Jacksonville. Armand Membu might be the most sensical pick in the entire draft for the Jets at 7. They have Fashanu last year at left tackle. Membu played right tackle, and everyone just assumed he'd be a top 10 pick and switch to left wherever he went. Now he just gets to play right tackle. So New York Jets, making sense. Not something that happens often. A little scared for Armand Membu because nothing for the Jets ever works out, but this feels like an actual smart thing that they did.
Yeah, and their offensive line is young because they still got Elijah Vera Tucker. You got Fashanu. They have another guard or center that's really young too. I can't think off the top of my head. But yeah, I like the Membu pick as well.
And for a team that's probably going to run the mess out of the football, running back and quarterback style. Like
Breece Hall, baby.
Yeah, like that's how they're going to try to muck games up this year. Run the ball, play defense, and Aaron Glenn, I'm sure, is perfectly fine to make that their identity. All right, head scratcher, Anthony. Who's your head scratcher of the first round?
Hold on, let me pull up the draft.
This is a thing that we've been planning on doing the entire show. Perhaps
it is.
You could have come prepared for the segment.
I will say, I mean, who you're going to pick is definitely...
I did steal the easy one.
No, I'm not stealing it.
I did steal the... And I'm saying I stole the easy one. It just so happened that I was live while it happened, and the way it went down was hilarious on our live stream. And I even cussed. Luckily, don't worry, it's bleeped. But yeah, it's... The other... 19's the other one.
Hey, look, I'm like, but Craig, you have three, so I'm like, I can't take all three.
What do you mean all three?
I mean, oh, the Giants.
Yeah, we're going to talk about them more next, for sure.
All right, so not the Giants.
Tampa.
Yeah, I mean, I ain't going to lie, yeah, I think it's Tampa, to be honest.
They took McMillan last year, plus they've got Mike Evans, plus they just re-signed Chris Godwin, and then you take Emeka Egbuka?
I mean, their guys are getting older, but at the same token, you just gave Godwin an extension. Mike Evans is still in his prime, still accumulating 1,000-yard season. So that is interesting. That is a very head-scratching move.
Yeah, not the pick we expected. Now, biggest head-scratcher, biggest facepalm of the draft, Atlanta Falcons. And when they traded back in, we were live on my YouTube page, at Craig Hoffman. It was me and my guy Tony Squares. And we were flabbergasted at the trade, and then we found out what they did with it. And with some slight musical enhancement, here's how that sounded. Also, the Falcons on the clock at 26? We got a trade. The Falcons are coming back in. Who the bleep are they coming back in for?
What are you doing?
LA Rams get a 2026 first-round pick from Atlanta. Oh, my God. What are you doing? The two picks after this Giants one we were just making fun of that wasn't enough to move for anything. Congratulations, Atlanta. You gave up next year's first? Next year's first? Who is this? Who could this possibly be?
Because they took Jalen Walker, so like it's not, you would think it's not for one of the edges. Unless they're going to double up, are they going to go like Mike Green or James Pierce or...
They just spent next year's first round pick on James Pierce. I mean, Atlanta. Atlanta, you do you.
This is the most Falcons pick. What are they doing? Nobody in the NFL likes him. You might have been able to get him at 46.
I did not think Atlanta could get any dumber after what they did in last year's draft. And I like Michael Penix Jr. who was using your draft capital intelligently. They just did it again. They just doubled down on stupidity. Atlanta is the dumbest franchise in the NFL. You already drafted Jalen. What are we doing, Craig? What are we doing?
As I sunk down in my chair, backing away slowly. Also, the music, the Curb music was too loud on that version. Whoops. Note to self, lower it. Luckily, if you want the version with the music lowered, go to TikTok or YouTube Shorts. Or if you want to see the full version, go to Instagram at Hoffman.sports. But yeah, the Falcons took a guy nobody liked and gave up next year's first round pick to do it. Unbelievable waste of draft capital.
I mean, I love you, I don't know. I'm speechless, actually. I was trying to find the words. I just couldn't.
It's a head scratcher, Anthony. It's a head scratcher. There's head scratchers and hat tips. I want to on Monday. We were short on the show today, obviously, but on Monday, I'm going to give a thought on every single team's first round pick. So we'll go through literally 1 through 32 and we'll give one thought each. So we'll do the whole draft in like 10 minutes. Be very fun. We'll also obviously do plenty of other review on Monday, including what the Commanders do this weekend. But let's take a deeper dive into the NFC East and what they did in the first round. Cowboys, Giants, and Eagles to wrap up as we send you off into Nationals baseball coming up at 6:15 here on the Team 980. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Wrapping up because we got the Nationals on the station here tonight. So 6:15, Nats on deck. So we have 8 minutes left in the show. We're going to run through the NFC East's picks, non-Commanders. A lot of dancing happening, Anthony, if you're watching on YouTube.
It's Friday.
Yeah, no, it is. And we're almost done. So I get it. I was just dumb enough to go on my own TikTok, and see, the Falcons reel, and the Falcons fans have a hold of it. These buffoons.
Yo. Are you serious?
Are like, they don't understand a one for a one. This could be the steal of the century. You know what? I'm so happy the Falcons did the dumbest thing in the NFL because based off my experience with Falcons fans over the last 12 months, that is exactly what you deserve. You get what you ask for. You people don't know jack about football, and thus you tolerate a front office that acts like they don't know anything about football, and I just don't. Match made in heaven. Y'all have fun. We're going to be over here going to the NFC Championship game with our rookie quarterback. Okay. The NFC East, I actually think there's a chance they did really well last night, all across the board in all four teams. I've talked about how I like Connerly. I think that pick works. There's a chance the Giants did the dumbest thing in football team building. I want to get there in a second. So we'll circle back to them. The easiest one to talk about is the Eagles. Of course they got Jahad Campbell. And of course the Ravens got Malachi Starks. Like, great athletes, great football players, some positional questions, teams overthink it. As we'll say with Campbell, there's also a shoulder injury. So that's not like, it's not a perfect one. I think he plays on the edge for them. And then some at linebacker is like a blitzer. But just another weapon for them. And they really value edges that can run, as you see with the guys like Nolan Smith, who ran a 4.39 at the combine. Campbell is an off-ball linebacker edge who can really run, a guy that can, you know, try to chase Jaden down. Like, damn it, the Eagles did it again, didn't they?
Yeah, the Eagles love them some Georgia boys or some Alabama boys. And it's ridiculous. They do get the best linebacker in football. And the fact that, you know, he'll be able to step in while N'Kobe Dean, you know, recovered from his injury, it's a little
scary. I don't like him,
man,
as an off-ball like, Mike linebacker, though. I'm telling you right now, if they try to do that, then I'm like, fine, y'all have fun with that.
You don't like that?
I don't. If he's going to play next, I mean, I know, like, he's not going to replace Zach Bond.
No.
You know, but, like, I like him a lot more in the Zach Bond role than I do. And maybe they think Bond is smart enough to play the Mike role while Dean is out. But, like,
yeah.
I think Campbell's an edge.
Okay.
Intel I got on him suggests edge. I'm so mad that I love it so much. The Cowboys Booker pick is so good.
Man.
That dude, did you see the clips of Micah? We'll play him on Monday in real time.
Yeah.
We don't have time today. But, like, that dude is something different from like a mental makeup standpoint. Like he's what their offensive line used to be. It was Zach Martin and Travis Frederick. And like those, they have rebuilt that line in a major way. And I will give Jerry Jones this credit. They will go offensive line in Dallas and they will double and triple down on it. And that was the basis of them being really good for a long time. And while they will eventually screw up his second contract and everyone else's second contract, because that's also what they do. They are very good at drafting. Their hit rate is high, and they just know how to eat their vegetables in the draft and not do crazy stuff. And this was such a perfectly Cowboys pick. Tyler Booker is one of the safest picks in this draft. I know exactly where his weaknesses are, but I also know what his strengths are, and his strengths are really good, and it fits what they do.
Yeah, his mentality is crazy. It is something
if you haven't heard, basically he's like, I want the guy I'm going against to wake up so excited to play football, and then I want to see his desire to play leave his eyes as I kick his butt rep after rep after rep for four quarters. Incredible.
Crazy.
So, sadly,
good pick by them. Good pick.
I love that pick by Dallas, sadly. Then there's the Giants. Abdul Carter, what are you going to say? Best pass rusher in the draft? I mean, it would be nice if they hadn't spent a top five pick on pass rusher 2 years ago, paid Brian Burns, and then still felt like they needed a pass rusher. But they did, and they got the best player on the board. They probably are kind of in that weird spot anyway. They tried to trade up to one. But then they might have committed the biggest sin that you can commit to me in NFL team building, which is you take a quarterback with a first-round pick for a coach who's about to get fired. And I don't say that lightly. There's a chance that this works out. And I will say, I like the fit of Brian Daboll and Jackson Dart, which is why I'm not just going to like lose my mind and be like, ah, the Giants, they don't know what they're doing. Like, I think that conversation was for January when they decided to keep Brian Daboll and Joe Shane, even though the owner was basically like, I don't know if I trust these people. And it's like, well, then you should probably just move on and let a new staff come in and figure it out. But Jackson Dart, big, athletic, bit of a gunslinger. He's not Josh Allen because no one's Josh Allen, but he's like somewhere in the Josh Allen light mold. And so for that reason, I like the fit with Daboll. I just don't like, why are you letting Joe Shane trade a pick in the future? He might, now you're going to have a new GM probably next year, unless this year's draft class just looks awesome. You're like, you want to know what? I think these are the right guys. I know we're having to take some medicine here because of the Daniel Jones thing, because of whatever. And if you think you're on the right track, you could keep them. But if you think you're going to fire them, you don't let them trade future capital for and get a quarterback that you now are committed to, because then you're offset. And now the new coach has to come in, see if he can save Jackson Dart. That wastes a couple years of him. That shortens his leash. Like, don't do it. It's just, if you want to take you want to take Tyler Shook in the third round, fine. But this is just, it's bad for Dart. It's bad for the organization. And in that way, I guess it's good for Washington. Hooray, go Giants, way to go.
Yeah, I mean, didn't this happen to Bryce Young? I want
to
say.
It happened to Bryce Young. It happened to.
It happens too much. And
I mean, it happened in, this is exactly what the Bears just did with Caleb.
Yep.
Where, like, they kept Eberflus, knowing that they probably shouldn't, waste 1 year of Caleb's rookie contract and 1 year of developing Caleb, fire Eberflus halfway through the year. Like, what happens when it's week 10? Or, like, honestly, what happens if it's week 3 and Russell Wilson's not playing great? Like, does Brian Daboll look at Jackson Dart and be like, sorry, kid, you're the only way you can save my job. You're not ready yet. Like, that's the thing is, like, you can't let individuals, like, your job as an owner or as a team president, as someone who exists up here, is to have the long-term vision of the franchise in perspective and provide safeguards. And it's just a total failure by John Mara to do that, basically by not trusting his own gut and firing these guys, which he clearly wants to fire anyway. All right, that's our show for today. We'll have much more reaction on Monday. Logan and I'll probably also do a Take Command this weekend, so make sure you're subscribed there. Before we leave you, we will give you the latest from the world in women's sports. It's presented to you by Wawa Chicken How You Wanna at Wawa, with customizable roasted or crispy chicken sandwiches. Have a great weekend, everybody. We will see you Monday back here for the Hoffman Show. Nats baseball is next.